Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, it is. Morena, Lara.
Morena.
How are you this morning?
Oh, look, it really is election year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's election year.
Full swing.
Just is.
what a crazy week it was last week. So much happening across the Motu and a lot of tragedy as well with the weather that went down.
Oh, totally. And I think it's one of those things where it's like a lot of people, and just even looking at, say, like Bryce Edwards' commentary and his blog, you know, talk about when is it a time with all of these tragedies and with this terrible weather and to actually use the words climate change, because we have to, like, feel for the whānau and those involved and the communities involved as well.
Yeah.
And also, like, just how sad it is that 15-year-old couple. Like, I can't even talk. Like, I'm going to start. I'm a little bit teary just thinking and starting to talk about them, right? So it's like, you know, incredibly tragic, incredibly terrible, but also, on the other hand, incredibly terrifying for a lot of people. The vast majority of New Zealanders believe in human-caused climate change, even though a small group are very loud. That's what we know from all the public opinion data. And I think that one of the big things for people who do the sort of social psychology and politics, political perceptions of climate change, is they've always said, you know, it's really hard to get people to care about these issues because they feel so far down the road. You know, something like the economy is quite instant because, hey, we've all got to get, like, petrol, rent, what food, whatever. But that these issues of climate change are further down the road. But now we're starting to see that they're not so much, that we're having all of these 1 in 100 year storms, flooding, landslips, all of these things and bits and pieces happening more frequently. So it's terrifying, and, you know, it is one of those things where I think more New Zealanders and more people across the world are going to start to pay more attention to these issues and make that direct link to climate change.
I also read Bryce Edwards' piece, and I found it really insightful and very deep. I really resonated with that whole whakaaro of, like, you know, it's so easy to say that it's, like, far too soon to politicise this or to make it about climate change, but in lots of ways it's actually way too late, eh?
Yeah, because the reality of politics is about life and death. Politics is about the allocation of resources. It's also about the game and the drama and the sports type part of it, but the fundamental thing is it's about allocation of resources and the decisions over where you put money in to save lives versus don't. I mean, when you think about the cost or the trade-offs of funding a new cancer drug or funding, you know, bowel cancer screening at a younger age, which was one of the previous election promises by both major parties, or if you think about something like investing in infrastructure, it's all about, like, where you take money from and where you put money. And in this case, you know, Labor did have that $6 billion infrastructure kind of planning fund. We've seen various proposals by Auckland Council and Wayne Brown around the future fund. You know, I think there's some politicians that are thinking about, hey, what do we need to do infrastructure-wise to make sure that these sorts of things don't happen or the effects of climate change are minimised? You know, they call it the adaptation-type plans. So this is in the political discourse, but it's, again, not being prioritised to the same extent. And, yeah, agreed, absolute banger of a piece by Bryce Edwards. He does some amazing work sometimes, so he's definitely someone to follow on good old Substack, or he does a newsletter as well. Sometimes, of course, we disagree, but a lot of the time I'm like, yeah, this is a good kind of set of things to think about. It's just a really hard thing sometimes to talk about climate change and life and death, but it is inherently part of politics.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see over the next few weeks how things play out in terms of responses to how the government has responded and what the sort of dominant corridor is about all of this. I know that there will, I'm sure that there will be some sort of investigation into what went down before this and how it became such a catastrophe. But I did find it really interesting when Bryce went into the sort of actions by the city council in years prior and how the landslide study that they did, the hazard boundary stopped where the permanent properties were, and then that's why it was like a campsite with a bunch of tourists that was more at risk.
Yeah, there's all of those sort of policy decisions along the way. And I imagine that, you know, if you were someone in that decision-making chain right now, that you're probably feeling absolutely terrible, right? And really thinking, like, man, all of the things that you could have, should have done are much like, you know, when you do have some kind of car accident in your life, you're like, damn, I shouldn't have turned that way, or whatever it is. So I imagine that both people are also kind of going, oh my God, what have I done? And that's probably a horrible place for everyone along the chain to think about. But there does need to be some responsibility in this specific case, but also like learnings for other places around the country. And doing that sooner rather than later is really important. So we've seen also in Australia in relation to the Bondi attack that politicians need to have quite a decisive response. They need to review, but the review needs to get done relatively quickly, and there needs to be concrete lessons, and they need to be implemented. I mean, I'm not sure what happens around that whole thing around slash, you know, the wastage from forestry, whether anything there has been implemented, because we've again seen flooding in those regions and, you know, slash moving through the floodwaters. So all of these things, you know, terrible tragedies. There are decisions in policy and politics that could have been done, but again, you can't, again, limited resources, limited reality, you know, you can only save so many lives will do so many things, but we need to think of, in all of these tragedies, all of these situations, what are the practical steps that policymakers can make? For climate change, these need to be implemented sooner rather than later, and there's not been that urgency, and specifically not that urgency in the two major parties. I feel like sometimes we forget about the Greens. We've been saying this for the last 50 years. But that, you know, it is a case that we do need to get onto it as a country and figure out how we will prevent this kind of thing happening in the future. One thing I'd also add is that, you know, this underfunding of local government and underfunding of scientists and, and science is a real problem because, you know, you need the sort of people, what are the slope experts called? But the geotechnical, you know, all of those sorts of scientists. You need the different climate scientists, the ecosystem people, the biologists, all of them. You need all of them to be being trained up and to be able to monitor the environment as well. And so that's another area where, you know, funding has been massively pulled out of the science system, and I'm concerned that we won't have the people, the personnel, the engineers that we need in place when we actually do turn and go, hey, let's do a proper response here.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you're a young scientist, it's not exactly encouraging to get stuck in and be a public sector worker or anything like that. So it'd be good to see some policy promising a little bit more pay for them.
Yeah, and hopefully, like, we can think about this in this next election. I think the economy is going to dominate the agenda because that is the more immediate issue for most people. But people can also think about multiple things at once, you know, not black and white. Literally, like, you're like, I was going to say your dumbest cousin, but your dumbest cousin. they can still think about many things at once, right?
Yeah,
like, literally everyone. So we don't need to patronise the public in a way, eh? And I think it's everyone's job as, like, commentators and media and so on and so forth to, yeah, try to make sure that climate change is on the agenda and what we're realistically going to do about it. Because, like, yeah, there's a small, loud lobby group, but they're small. And just because they're loud doesn't mean that we should, you know, have them move or push something on or off the issue agenda. It's similar with treaty issues, right? We know that that's a small, loud group, well-funded. We need to, as the public, as the bulk of the kind of people talking about things, kind of push these issues back onto the agenda because they're, like, yeah, important, and we know that, you know, especially the younger generations, the Gen Zers, the Gen Alpha, the millennials are very concerned about these problems.
It is really interesting looking back at pieces around the 2024 budget and what was cut from the Climate Emergency Response Fund. And it just feels really tragic to look at all of these things that we can't turn to right now, like funding in Mātauranga Māori-based approaches, when, you know, on the ground we've seen in lots of these cities, like Marae, the ones who step up and provide shelter and kai for those in need. And it's real sad to think about the things that have been cut, but I also feel as though it's going to shape this election year in a really interesting way, eh?
Yeah, the other layer of all of it, of course, is the inequity in climate change and in all of these so-called natural disasters, is that, you know, we know that they affect people that are more in poverty, that, you know, do have unstable housing, don't have the resources to just, like, go to their batch or, like, other house, or which would probably displace someone in a lot of cases, but they don't have the ability to just leave. I remember talking to someone after the Christchurch earthquake, and they were like, oh, yeah, I just went to my other house. It's like, great.
Awesome.
Wonderful. Nice for you. But, you know, it's like these sorts of things are going to affect people who are in the working in lower middle class and middle class a lot more, who don't have those extra resources to be able to just leave and to be able to just, like, start again. And, you know, a lot of New Zealanders who've worked really hard for housing or even, like, their nice rental and their awesome couch and TV set up, you know, like, they're not going to be protected and not going to have insurance and are going to lose everything. And so that's going to be a real issue of like, hey, how are they going to respond as politicians to this population when these, you know, climate issues become more and more salient, become more and more part of someone's lives? I mean, I think as a society, morally, we're going to have to address it, and that's going to be on the politicians.
Mm. It will be really interesting to see how things play out as the sort of immediacy and the urgency of both the politics of climate change and the politics of economy become a bit more level-footed, maybe.
Yeah, and see what happens with Winston Peters, of course. That's the other thing.
Oh,
we've seen another poll today on RNZ, Reed Research poll, that sees Winston Peters soaring, his preferred prime minister ratings going up. And I think when people are annoyed, there's a few different ways they can turn.
Yeah.
And one is to martyr Winston, and that's what they've been doing for the last, since the 90s. Like, there is one kind of pattern of behaviour, and we're seeing it play out currently.
Fascinating.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Lara. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and really interested to see how things continue to play out.
This election year.
Yeah, it's a long one. November.
Did you win heaps of money when it got announced, or nah?
I didn't put in any sweepstakes. Yeah, this is the thing, because I'm a political scientist that lives in Auckland. I don't get to, like, bother all my colleagues in the office at Victoria Uni. But, it's otherwise they would have been in a sweepstakes, Or if I had, you know, if I was teaching, I'd probably do a sweepstakes.
You can brag to us. We know that you called it.
You did.
No. I just copy Professor Dean Knight, honestly. That guy, follow him on LinkedIn, or he's probably on Blue Sky, but Professor Dean Knight, he's a public law constitutional professor. Just chef's kiss, amazing.
Love it.
Pro tip. Thanks, Lara.
Thank you so much.
You have an awesome week, and we'll catch up with you next Tuesday.
Kia ora, thank you.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.